Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me on the podcast today is a first-time guest. He served as an analyst with the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of International Security and Non-Proliferation, as well as an Obama administration appointee at the U.S. Department of Defense. He is now a journalist contributing regularly to outlets such as The Hill, and you've also likely seen him in Skywatcher's Part 2 video released. Welcome to the podcast, Marek von Rennenkampf. Marek, welcome.
Andy, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's took me a while to get this arranged, Marek. I've probably been asking you for the best part of two and a half, 3 years to come on the podcast, and I won't go into the details. You've given me certain things that if this happened at this point, I'll jump on, and if this happened, and it's always been tentative whether those things happened or not. So you've avoided it this long, but I think you've had your true coming out on a few shows and news items and whatnot. But if you're going to jump on a Skywatcher video and sit there chatting, you're very much getting your hands dirty in this topic now. So there was no more saying no, was there?
I fear that you're correct, Andy. You got me, buddy.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's find out a bit about you first and your background. What's kind of brought Marek to the UFO dance?
Yeah, and I'll be perfectly transparent. You know, I didn't think about UFOs. I thought it was squarely tinfoil hat territory. This is not a subject that fascinated or, you know, that I was obsessed with growing up or didn't work on it while I was in the government. No nexus to this whatsoever. I even missed the 2017 New York Times story when it came out, just as a testament to how little I followed this. That said, I did work at the Pentagon, and I did work with some aviators, also some Navy helicopter pilots. So I knew the kind of the character, the style, the bravado, how they carried themselves. And when I saw Commander Dave Fravor, I think most people know, but he's the skipper, the squadron commander of VFA 41, the Black Aces, which is the squadron, and he himself and 3 other aviators saw that well-known tic-tac shaped object in November of 2004. I watched an interview with him on Joe Rogan, I think somewhere in the late 2019 timeframe, and again, I knew how these, you know, how the aviators carried themselves. Fravor is the real deal, Top Gun trained. He was not many people know this, but he was in a PBS documentary series, and it was kind of a, you know, a key player in that, widely respected in the community. And, you know, he retold and recounted his Tic Tac encounter, and it wasn't just him, right? It was six other eyeballs that saw this object as well at close range. And that, that really took me down the rabbit hole. I then engaged, with everybody's favorite debunker, Mick West, for quite some time. And I was curious, like, what, you know, okay, these three Navy videos, they on their face, they look interesting, but this guy thinks he's figured them out. And I wanted to convince myself that there's nothing to this, or that there was something to this. So I engaged, Mick, you know, we exchanged many, many emails and had Zoom discussions. And, you know, from my perspective and my opinion and talking to aviators, not just Mick, but, I came to the conclusion that he was completely wrong about his theory. So, that only deepened the rabbit hole for me, right? It gets even more interesting when, well, gosh, when the closer you look, those videos do not have very easy prosaic explanations. And then I went into the history of the topic, the Blue Book, the Sign, the Grudge era. And I think another major turning point for me was reading, Captain Ed Ruppelt's book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, which I think came out in 1956. So that's a long-winded way of saying I didn't really think of this topic. I didn't focus on it. I'm not a lifer, but boy, has it gotten me now. And I'm deep down the rabbit hole, and it's just a fascinating, fascinating topic that, you know, the more you dig, the more, you know, you find interesting things, and you can go in any number of directions. So here we are. And just very quickly, I want to say credit to you, Andy. I've been listening to your podcast for years now. You've been doing a phenomenal job of getting some very interesting people. And I'm glad just to be one of those individuals to have this platform and to speak with you.
No, I appreciate that. None of the big guests would come on this month, so it was good timing to get you on, Manik. It was a joking. It's interesting, though, that you say you're a late bloomer to the topic, because it's always fascinating to hear whether folks have had that interest all the way through life, or if someone's came in a bit later, they almost have perhaps a bit less of a bias towards the topic naturally that you maybe have. Did you have any interest growing up? Did you watch X-Files, Alien movies, or was it just completely not in there at all?
Yeah, I wasn't a big X-Files watcher growing up. Watched Star Trek and Star Wars here and there. Those are just kind of like, you know, I think a lot of people just had that as part of the cultural zeitgeist, yeah. Right? So, it's fascinating. And I went through several evolutions, right? I went from not thinking that UFOs are, you know, a legitimate topic of discussion to, wow, there's absolutely something to here. But I simultaneously thought that there's no chance that there could be these secret government retrieval programs. And boy, was my mind blown again when Schumer and Grush came out with, you know, these various allegations of crash retrieval programs. So it's been an evolution. I've had several ontological shocks throughout this journey. As we move forward.
Yes, you come in with that kind of blank canvas, which is always an interesting position for folks to come into the topic. I want to just ask very briefly, your roles within government, while not UFO related, I think it's one of those things when people see, federal employee and US Department of State, etc. What was it exactly you done within those roles, just so people can know that?
Absolutely. So at the Pentagon, I worked for the Secretary of Defense. So at the time, it was a gentleman named Leon Panetta. He was previously the CIA director he basically was the director of CIA when the bin Laden raid and operation occurred. So some, you know, very well known in national security circles. So in my job, at the Pentagon, I was again, an Obama administration appointee. So I came in with the administration as part of the usual churn that comes and goes in US politics. There's a couple thousand political appointee positions. And I supported the Secretary of Defense and also the President when needed, when they traveled abroad. So I would I'd travel ahead of time. I was a member of the Secretary's advance team. So we would hit the ground maybe a week or two ahead of time. We'd work with the U.S. Embassy. We would work with the host government to kind of do all the logistics, you know, scout out the motorcade routes. We would know everywhere that the Secretary would be before he goes, and we brief him up, as soon as he hits the ground. So, very logistical, tons of travel, a lot of work with US diplomats overseas, spent a lot of time, did six missions to Afghanistan, one to Iraq, all over the world. We put on some mileage, and then I left the government, went to graduate school in Monterey. There's a really phenomenal national security focused program at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies there. It doesn't have the profile as, you know, the Harvards or, you know, the kind of the bigger DC foreign policy focused schools, but it's a wonderful school. I did 2 years there focused on two very cheerful topics, terrorism and weapons of mass destruction, non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. So nuclear, chemical, biological weapons. And then I went back into the government, served, I was at the State Department doing counter chemical weapons programming. This is at the height of ISIS when they were making some pretty nasty chemical weapons in Iraq and Syria. So we were kind of trying to figure out ways to cut off or stop the flow of precursor chemicals, for example. So again, very boring kind of national security stuff, but boring in the sense nothing to do with UAPs. And then I left government and have moved on. Yeah, again, there's, you know, gosh, if you know, hopefully there are no conspiracies because I'm a former government employee that I'm furthering some narrative that's, you know, just you address that right off the bat. I mean, I find this topic fascinating from a purely personal level. Nobody's telling me to write about this. This is all just pure fascination on my part.
No, that's good to know. But I wonder, you talk about national security implications, a lot of those from what you've done and what you've studied. I won't pretend to understand the detail of that. But is that a hat you can still wear going into the UFO topic? And do you continue to look at UFOs, UAP, with that hat on, with that lens, those kind of transferable skills?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think very broad sense, I'll just use these recent quote unquote drone incursions or the new Tic Tac video that Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp just released. Let's just remove intent and origin speculation, you know, from the equation. There are objects that quite clearly demonstrate some very odd flight characteristics that are flying with regularity, alarming regularity. And we can get into the meat and potatoes of this, but with alarming regularity directly over sensitive military sites and assets in ways that are truly baffling, right? Like, let's just take the 2019 swarming, quote unquote, drone swarming incidents off the coast of California, Southern California. This went on for months and you had brightly illuminated objects with flashing lights swarming, literally swarming these ships. We have, thanks to Jeremy Corbell and again, and George Knapp, we have actual footage of the radar display of about, you know, 10 to 12 of these objects literally swarming the USS Omaha. We have deck footage from that night of these things blinking, flashing lights. They're just saying, hey, look at me, you know, and we're operating here 150 miles off the coast. And oh, by the way, the Omaha video shows an object, a spherical object going into the ocean. The next day, literally the very next day, there's another documented incident with the USS Paul Hamilton in the same general area being swarmed by unknown objects and one of them, quote, splashing into the ocean, right? So that's from a straight national security perspective, how is there not more hair on fire in Washington, D.C.? You know, the story has kind of come out in bits and pieces. The 60 Minutes piece recently on the drones, the quote unquote drones, I thought was well done. But from my perspective, this is alarming. This is truly a crisis to have this much activity, this so brazen occurring and no answers, truly no answers. The Biden administration was abysmal on this. And the Trump administration, despite promising to get to the bottom of it on day one, is just as awful. And I think people truly do not know what is happening. And government being government, when they don't have a good answer, they punt and deflect. So the long-winded way of saying this is a crisis from a national security perspective.
Let's kick off with the drones chat then, because I've got that in amongst my stuff. So I just moved my notes up. I like to think I'm pretty fair with this topic, and it would be really easy for me, Marek, to jump into any UFO video sighting story and be like, oh my God, it's aliens, NHI. I could blow my face up on a thumbnail for a YouTube video and be like, aliens are here and have your face on it. but I think there's a more nuanced and sensible conversation largely to be had around these things. The drone flaps kind of started in the UK a month or two before it hit the US. So there was four sites in the UK where there were drones being reported. Most, if not all of them, were US bases on UK soil, however that works out, okay? It then started in the East Coast of the United States. Then that, it almost went viral. And it was a sort of like, right now we've got the Minecraft movie out. And you've got the chicken jockey memes happening. I don't know if you've seen these online. If folks haven't, and I don't play Minecraft, basically there's a scene in the movie where there's a little character from the game and everyone in the cinemas have been jumping up and filming themselves going, okay. chicken jockey, and they make a mess of the cinema. I'm sure employees hate it, but I'm sure the movie companies and cinema companies love the fact people are back in movie theaters. But this little scene, this little moment has went viral. And it's kind of captured a global imagination and ignited a global conversation. The drone situation for me mirrored that, where there was almost a viral, people were jumping on the bandwagon and filming anything in the sky, posting it online, hashtag drone, hashtag UFO. And I would say 90% of the videos I could see online didn't show me anything at all that wasn't someone saying I was seeing something that I wasn't, or they were saying, here's a blinking light in the sky, but later on it shot off an incredible speed. That's just the UFO topic. So I wonder, like, that kind of chicken jockey moment we had, was there an element of bandwagon jumping from folk? And what, from a national security point of view for you, really stood out that there's something interesting to this that isn't, and this is me being long-winded now, not just China playing with some really cool toys, and I'll pull China out the air as the US's kind of biggest, you know, competitor in terms of military tech. Because I imagine, like you mentioned, Marek, people in Washington not having their hair set on fire. For me, trying to think logically, is that not because they're sitting there going, yeah, we've got some really similar stuff to this, and we probably know exactly what this is, so let's just leave it.
The possibilities are limitless and endless. So I'll address maybe one point right off the bat that you made, that you are spot on. I'd say almost all, the vast majority of news footage from certainly the New Jersey incidents over the winter were indeed of misidentified jet aircraft and commercial aircraft. No question about that. There was a major component of hysteria. Mass hysteria that, you know, people who go about their days maybe looking at their phones when they walk outside finally looked up, you know, up into the sky and noticed that there are planes up there and mistook those. So absolutely, this and that gets to perhaps one of the most challenging elements of this whole UAP topic, and that is the signal to noise ratio. And I try, right, when I write, I try to just bring out what is truly well-sourced, interesting, and is not, you know, nebulous or just nonsense. There is no shortage of nonsense in this space, unfortunately. Yes. And to your credit, right, you do a phenomenal job of weeding through the signal from the noise. Now, is it possible that China, Russia, or some other power is flying their objects, their advanced craft, oh, by the way, that can resist, as we've now heard from the former commander of NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, that the objects over Langley resisted all drone countermeasures and jamming efforts. The same thing we've heard with the UK in an incursion. So that to me suggests these are advanced. These are not your hobbyists off the shelf drones, if they are in fact drones. And the first thought when you hear of such activity over bases in the UK, and there has been activity in Germany, is the Russians. This is just straight out of the Russian kind of hybrid playbook, especially given the locations in Europe that we've seen them. We can't rule anything out at this point, right? But it is fascinating. The one thing that makes me somewhat skeptical of a nation state being behind this, and I could very well be wrong, and you know, that's we'll figure that out as we go. But the one thing that strikes me as very odd, and I've mentioned this in the past, is if you look at the videos over Langley, the videos of the objects in 2019 off the coast of California, these things had bright flashing lights. If you're a nation state actor and you're doing something as provocative as flying and hovering over military facilities and assets, you generally don't bright flashing lights on your craft, right? It's just hey, look at me, the show, the pageantry of some of this is truly perplexing, right? China generally does not want to spark a geopolitical crisis by saying, hey, look, we're flying our next generation aircraft over Langley Air Force Base, for example, which is a key air defense facility. I can't stress that enough, right? Air defense, and here you have identified objects flying over that facility. Same time, I find it fascinating that no good imagery of these objects has appeared. Despite all the advanced sensors and cameras, not one image of a quadcopter has emerged. The only image that we really have that shows some kind of structure is that Omaha video, which again is a sphere moving against the wind and dropping into the water. It's just an enormous mystery. Does that answer your question kind of as to the nation state
Let me expand on it. I don't normally bring listener questions in too early, but I've got one that's very relevant here. But to give a little bit of subtext to it, in your piece for The Hill, you quoted Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, UAP champion at times, other times seems to go colder on the subject, to be fair. She was quoted as saying, regarding the drones, "We're not concerned about most of it. We are concerned about specific drone incursions over Langley, arsenals and other sensitive military sites." And you've brought that up there, okay? Laura made a good point, and this, I think, will expand on what you've just said, Marek. So Laura says, "In regard to the mystery drones, there doesn't seem to be much video footage that clearly shows anomalous vehicles and aerial activity, at least not that I've seen. Most of it seems to be distant flashing lights in the sky. Not that I don't believe it's happening, but why isn't there better video of it?" And this is the point I want to get to. "Or is there, and it's being kept to the public? If there are swarms of mystery drones around military bases, surely the military has the ability to record this activity." So, Marek, from your point of view and the work you've done, surely they have 4K, 8K video of very clear objects, and they know exactly what these are or aren't.
Great question, and I'm glad you asked. And the best, I'm just going to quote General Glenn Van Herk, who was the retired NORAD commander. And let me just preface this: in the Langley incidents in 2023, I think it was December, late 2023. The Air Force called in a special NASA aircraft. I believe it's a WB-57. That is literally, it's a giant camera mounted on a plane. It is just perhaps the most sophisticated camera in the sky. That to me suggests that they could not image these objects with what they had on hand. And following those, I think just about maybe 2 months ago or so, General Van Herk put out in a LinkedIn post, he said something to the effect of, "We tried to characterize," and I think I'm including imaging these objects under characterize, and he said something to the effect of, "We tried to characterize these objects and had extremely limited results or no results at all," basically. That to me suggests that we don't have good footage and imagery of these things, which boggles the mind. It does perplex me. How is that possible? I don't know. I'll just say as an aside, there have been, I think, 3 or 4 cases just in the last year where foreign nationals, I think they've all been Chinese nationals, have been arrested for flying little hobbyist drones in and around and over sensitive military airspace. That's easy. The military has very little problem with the counter UAS technology that they have on site to figure out individuals that are doing this and track them down and arrest them. That's all public. You can see those, right? Those are news stories. Nothing of that effect has occurred with the Langley, the New Jersey, the Picatinny Arsenal, the naval weapons station Earl incursions. Same with the off the coast of California. And you, Andy, you might be familiar with this. In at the very end of 2019 and into early 2020, there was this unbelievably bizarre series of sightings in Colorado, rural Colorado, Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, where some of the law enforcement records that have been released via the Freedom of Information Act are just mind-boggling. What the police officers reported in some cases were these mothership dynamics with 30 to 50 individual objects. That's the direct quote from law enforcement, from government emails. They're seeing 30 to 50 of these objects. I have a hard time believing that they're making that up, not only because there were multiple reports of that kind of activity, that those flight dynamics, but we're also seeing those now in Wyoming in the last 3 or 4 months, the exact same mothership dynamic with dozens or, you know, dozens smaller objects flying around. To see that kind of repetition throughout time and history tells me that there's a trend there. But, you know, and I encourage anybody to FOIA the local Wyoming law enforcement entities that have said they have footage and they've sent it to the Wyoming Department of Homeland Security. So going into the weeds, but it seems like there is footage at a distance of this bizarre activity. I share the sentiment that, you know, there's frustration and I'm perplexed why there isn't more.
The sightings, I had Gabe Lenners on recently. He's just on a documentary series, Obscurum, documenting those drone cases. And it's really interesting. And you can go into it and you can take your UFO hat off and listen to it. And you might not think anything UFO, NHI related potentially, but equally, you can stick the word UFO over drone. And it's equally as fascinating. So like you say, something really interesting did happen there. So people should go and check out that Obscurum series. Regarding the footage, this is what gets me. And again, I'm going to ask you to put that national security expertise cap back on here, which is why I've got you on for your expertise. You've got people like Lou Elizondo and many others, Chris Mellon, coming out and saying they do have HD 4K footage of craft where you can clearly see, shit, this is something paradigm shifting, no exhaust plumes, you know, it's literally there. Fravor's Tic Tac is there. You can see it in full HD. I've heard cases where pilots have literally shit themselves while recording. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but the pilot literally defecates because of the thing next to them. And you're talking, you know, Top Gun pilots.
Yeah.
And they're trying to describe what they're seeing and they're panicking because the creme de la creme don't know what to do when they're seeing something that is just, this isn't in the playbook.
Yeah.
So we hear that this footage exists. Is it the case then that even some of the top admirals, generals, whatever those roles and ranks may be, don't get access to this stuff and that there's internal struggles and strife amongst that? What would make sense to you that appears we have this footage? I say we as a species can capture it, but rarely do people get to see it, analyze it, or use it.
Yeah, that is a very, very good question. And, you know, and it becomes even more complex if you consider or if you put any stock in the new whistleblower claims about Immaculate Constellation, which is an alleged program that siphons off and isolates and segregates, allegedly segregates this really anomalous footage and keeps it away from most people in the government, right?
Yeah.
So it's basically kind of a repository, secret library, if you will, that your average four-star general cannot access. So it begs many questions. You know, at first when I heard, there's, you know, these longstanding rumors that in the 2004 Nimitz cases that these mysterious individuals landed on Princeton, which is a guided missile cruiser that had advanced radar that tracked all these objects, and that somebody came in and snatched all the data, all the radar data and the bricks that, you know, they're called, these are just basically sensitive data storage devices, for lack of a better word. And at first I was very skeptical. Commander Fravor kind of shot those down. But the more that I think about it and the more, you know, if some of these allegations are true, that's exactly what's happening, that some of this footage gets disappeared. I think, I hope maybe somebody on the internet can correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that deck logs from the Nimitz are missing in the National Archives. The USS Omaha, the deck logs from that famous spherical object moving are missing as well. So that you start to think, well, gee, is somebody really trying to cover this up, or are there prosaic explanations for this? Somebody wanted a souvenir. I don't know the answer to that, but, it is interesting that some of the key, there are allegations and in some cases proven allegations that key data is missing. That's a long-winded way of saying, I have no idea if it's such extraordinary footage did exist. One side of my brain thinks there's no way it can be kept secret. People start talking, it gets out somehow, or people whisper to each other like, holy shit, dude, like this is unbelievable. Watch this. And the other side of me says, maybe that footage is so locked down and there is some truth to these allegations that the most extraordinary footage is allegedly locked away, segregated, isolated from the rest of the government.
Yeah. And even the Tic Tac stuff, and I've heard some of the more interesting data is from facilities on the coast that would normally track things coming in, like missiles from greater heights than the radar would reach, places you don't know exactly where they are or that they even exist. And yep, with equipment that you're not going to find out because of national security reasons, very much, no, you won't get to see this, you won't hear it. And they tracked those objects going to and from whatever they were going to and from. So I think that footage argument we've had over the last few years, there was rumors, I don't even know if you remember, Marek, 3 or 4 years ago in the early days of the podcast, there was rumors we were going to potentially get a clear photograph of a black triangle coming out of the water. And there was a myth around it and everything that was built up.
Yeah,
I think most folks seem almost to have settled. I know I have, at least, that the government, you know, quote unquote, the government's a big place. The government's tens of thousands of employees doing all kinds of jobs. But the people who have access to this footage, which I would imagine does exist, aren't just going to release it as easily as we expect. So what we're kind of moving more towards are private sector, private individuals, organizations. And I suppose that brings us nicely on to Skywatcher, which out of nowhere in 2025, Jake Barber bursts onto the scene with Ross Coulter on News Nation. Big exclusive, big claims. I would still encourage folks, if you've seen the 40-minute piece with Jake and Ross, do try and spare the time to watch the near 3-hour documentary piece, because it really does go into more detail and flesh out. The 40-minute is for the TikTok generation because it's bang, 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 and it does get a bit heavy. But if you watch the full piece, it really does help flesh things out, folks. But Jake Barber, Skywatcher as an organization, released their second video recently, Marek, and I was pleasantly surprised to see you pop up within that. So can you talk about your relationship with Skywatcher and how that's came about?
Absolutely. And thanks for asking about that. So I'll just preface this by saying I am truly impressed by Skywatcher. They are, again, back to the video point, they are not satisfied with just waiting for the government, as Gary Nolan says, for daddy government to provide the videos, which it's not how it works, right? It's just the national security world is so resistant to letting out any information ever under any circumstances, right? That's just kind of a cultural kind of issue with the national security community. So Skywatcher, they are not content to just wait around. They're going out there and they're getting data. And what I am very, very much looking forward to is to have, right, an independent scientific analysis of this data, wind data, radar data, and the imagery, the infrared and the electro-optical, just the normal camera kind of footage that they collect. And oh, by the way, this is a private entity that has basically nation state level sensor equipment, radar, infrared, as I mentioned, and camera systems. That's a remarkable kind of combination to have that sensor suite and then also just the access and the ability to go deploy it and gather data. What I like about Skywatcher is they're just putting out the data. They're not making any sweeping claims. They're saying, hey, here's what we're seeing. No sweeping claims. And I went out there, and and basically I don't have a formal relationship with Skywatcher, just to be crystal clear. I came in to discuss with James Fowler, who's the kind of the leader of the tech side of the organization, and we kind of walk through the various classes that they've identified. So again, I just came in as a kind of an outside analyst to kind of bring out the tech side and shed some light on it. And I'm glad that they are, you know, moving forward and that they have been as proactive and forward leaning as they have been.
I'm glad in a way then, because it could have went both ways, that you've not got a formal relationship with them. Because I think a lot of those guys right now are having to keep a bit more quiet and guarded in terms of what they're doing and as where things at. When you say there were no sweeping statements, there did seem to be a bit of a crossed wire between what initially was said from Jake and what they potentially were going to do. And I don't know if you got this, but what almost it seemed the entire, and I don't like speaking for everyone, but most of the UFO community seemed to take from those interviews in early days that Skywatcher could summon craft psychically, psionically. I know they've got new terms as well, but let's call a spade here. They can summon UFOs psychically. And it was like, oh, well, they're going to do it and land one of these things in front of them. It then seemed things were maybe walked back is the wrong term, but maybe we got more context and things were set up differently, almost as if, wait, this is what we plan on doing.
Yeah.
So you're agreeing with me here. So is that what you took from it as well? That
yeah, that's a good question. And just to be clear, my role, I interacted with James Fowler and I was on the tech side, and I don't think I'm betraying anything, but here there's just the way the Skywatcher organization is arranged. It's one organization, but there's the tech side and the sensor side, and then there's there's a new word for it, but the psionic side is right. The
neuromeditative.
There we go. That's
yeah. I was trying to remember what it was. It doesn't roll off the tongue, but yeah,
that's right. Yes. And they operate independently. So, and again, my focus was on the tech side with James. And to James's credit, he says, you know, he's not a believer in UFOs or aliens. I wouldn't say he expressed skepticism about anything, let alone the psionic element. But they are separate operations within Skywatcher. They work in tandem, but they are kind of right. They are separate.
Sure.
Entities. Yeah. And again, my focus was on the tech side. I had met with some of the psionic folks, super, just wonderful, really nice people. But I just, you know, I can't speak any further from my experience and having been there in person. I haven't seen, I'll leave it at that. I just,
sure.
I'd be very curious to see how it develops over the coming months. I know the team is planning to deploy more often, so I very much look forward to the next episode, which will focus on the psionic element. That's the focus for the next episode. So I suspect we'll be hearing more in the near future.
Yeah, what excites me about it are a couple of things. One, I've spoken to people who work around what is happening there. And they have all expressed confidence and intrigue, similar to yourself, that they can deliver what's being said. Which for me, I'm like, okay, cool. That's interesting. And there are people I would trust that they would say to me otherwise and say, nah, we'll see. But they were pretty optimistic, which is nice. But also, what's coming out from Skywatcher, it still seems. And I would have to go back and watch everything again, that there was maybe a sensationalism at first. Maybe this was on the part of News Nation and how they showed, and we all know news media, you'll know this as well as anyone, can make things look a certain way. Maybe it was put across a way that wasn't quite right. And almost it's being taken back a step now to say, look, maybe we can do this stuff. And the reasons they know they can do it are more governmental, I've been told, perhaps, or people have suggested they're aiming some of the messages and what Jake Barber says at folks who are in the know, or the gatekeepers, or people who are well aware of what they're trying to say. So there's almost a public conversation happening, but things are being said that's to give folks in the background a chance to come forward and go, you know what, we can do this. We can turn on this, whatever this dog whistle is. And, you know what we're talking about. The public might not, you know, we're not going to show you it. It's under a big blanket just now. But, you know, we can press that button and you know what happens. But we would rather you came forward and spoke to us first and let's go and deal with this like adults. So that gives me hope that perhaps there's something like that happening in the background. What I'd like to know from your understanding, we saw this part two video, which you were a part of interviewing James. It wasn't quite clear the timeline of the footage they'd put together and the content. Can you clear up any of that as to when was this happening and what is their working timeline?
That's a great question. And first I'll just say, you know, that's not the first time I've heard this kind of chatter that what Skywatcher is doing is an attempt to maybe spur action and movement by perhaps elements of the government that are doing similar activity. I truly do not know if that is accurate or not, but it's not the first time I've heard that.
Hey, call it a mini false flag almost.
It's fascinating. It's an inch. If that's what that's what's actually going on, that's like nine dimensional chess. But anyway, that's a whole discussion, right? And I'll say, I just want to give you a nod to, you know, the psionic stuff. Like on its face, it sounds absurd. On its face, it does sound completely absurd. But I have, again, as I mentioned at the beginning, I've had many, many ontological shocks on my journey through this topic. So I'm not closing the door to anything at this point. First of all, second, timeline for the footage. The short, and I'm very comfortable saying, I don't know, but what I understand is that much, if not most of that footage that was shown in episode two was recorded in the years prior to even Skywatcher being formed, I believe. And a lot of that footage was, and James says this, that, you know, he did contracting work for the government, and that footage was recorded via kind of previous work that he did as a subcontractor for the government.
No, that's fair. And are you comfortable then from the time you've spent with them, from what they're looking to do? And I think it really does make a difference when you can speak to someone face to face, when you can look them in the eye. You can see it on TV, but to spend that kind of personal time, are you confident they can bring about what they say they can?
In full transparency, I've never actually met Jake Barber face to face. He wasn't out at the site when I was there. I think he had family commitments. So I never met Jake. Have interacted with him by phone. Seems all these guys seem dedicated and they seem driven, and they have set lofty goals. From the character and the nature of the individuals that I met, I think they are truly engaged and locked onto this topic. Whether they can prove X or Y beyond a shadow of a scientific doubt, I am just as fascinated, intrigued, and hopeful to see whether that occurs in the next, you know, the next year, right? I think they set the end of this year as a deadline. So we'll see. The proof will be in the pudding. I think initial results are fascinating, but we do want to see that secondary and tertiary level of analysis that gives us increasing confidence that the data they have captured is indeed anomalous.
Yeah, I like the fact it does seem to have a finite timeline on it, because I know disparagingly, but I get why people are skeptical. There was some, I use the Discord channel for this podcast as a good measure or barometer or where is the conversation at with folks, and people were pleasantly positive about episode two. I actually thought it'd be a lot more negative towards what came out, and I really like to see that even some of the really skeptical guys in there were like, do you know what, there's some good stuff there. And it seems to be that they were calling it Skywatcher Ranch at points, to have a little dig at Skinwalker Ranch. And is this just going to be series 12 episode 9 and 15 years time's going to be out? And I get what they're getting at. But like you say, there's a finite time where they have to probably deliver or go away and rethink whatever it is, or indeed have they over-egged the pudding, not to use a Jake Barber egg joke there, but you know.
I couldn't agree more. And look, at the end of the day, they're not asking people for money. They're just out there because they are, and they've gone, you know, they've bent over backwards to say, we're not asking for your money. This is not a scam. We're not, they're out there doing stuff. They're being active. So if people want to criticize that, fine, but they're actually out there doing, they're out in the field doing the hard work. So it's easy to criticize when you're, you know, you're sitting in your basement, and, you know, you never leave home and or actually go out and do anything and accomplish anything. So to their credit, they're out there doing it. And I really am curious to see where this data goes.
Yeah, I'm very glad they've got that private funding through SALT and Clocus and all those, that group. But, but it seems to have, they've not said that, but that seems to be the route it's kind of came from, which is fantastic. The general whistleblower theme now, it seems we spent 2024, Marek, and I don't know if you felt this. 2023, we had Grush come forward, and that truly was huge because, again, I've said before, I had journalists from UK broadsheet newspapers and mainstream UK news contact an idiot like me over a couple of days.
You're not an idiot. Come on now.
Ah, well, my wife would argue otherwise. But they were asking me, like, you know, this guy's came out and he seems really serious. And, you know, it's not like an old guy at the end of his life. And it's a really young guy who's at the peak of his career. And what's, is this true? And they had a genuine interest and fascination. And it came and went far too quickly. It lasted all of 4 days here in the UK news cycle, but 4 days in a cycle is quite a long time. It didn't seem to go much further than that for what seemed the rest of 2024. And I think we all seemed ready for this avalanche of whistleblowers to come forward.
Right.
Jason Sands was a name who came out, and I've had Jason on the podcast. But then you have a Jake Barber come forward, and names are starting to pop out. Do you see this being the future of the topic, short, medium, or long term? We get more Barbers, more Sands, more Grushes?
I truly don't know. And that is the key question, right? That is the core question. You know, there was hope that, to your point, that there would be some kind of critical mass of whistleblowers coming out. What I did find truly fascinating is that the director of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, AARO, which I think most people know is the government's UFO UAP analysis effort, Dr. John Kozlowski, he testified before the Senate in November. And he stated there, the first question, to your point about Senator Gillibrand being hot and cold, the very first question of that hearing was something to the effect of, it's been widely reported that firsthand witnesses do not trust AARO, will not go to AARO. What are you doing to ensure that they will go to AARO or be more comfortable going to AARO? And Kozlowski states right there on the record, we have at least two, he said a couple of firsthand witnesses have gone to AARO. That's fascinating. That happened, you know, we're in April now, mid-April. That's what, 5-6, he was, Barber testified back in the fall. It's been 6 months since Barber has testified or spoken to AARO. Crickets from the Pentagon. They're just saying we're investigating it. That's fascinating to me, right? That's interesting. Number one, the admission from Kozlowski that they have heard from firsthand witnesses. That's a huge deal that I don't think people really picked up on as much as they should have. And again, you know, it's been half a year now plus, and crickets from the Pentagon, bad messaging. So what's going on? What's the deal there? That's a thread I would really want to pull on. Whether more whistleblowers will come out, I just don't know. You know, we've heard rumors that the whistleblower to the Immaculate Constellation program, that alleged program, there's been chatter that individual will come forward. I will say just yesterday, Jeremy Corbell brought a second witness to the USS Jackson attack video, which I'd love to get into just briefly.
Yeah,
have a minute please or two. For it. So, you know, you do have this trickle that there are two, you know, Navy witnesses. I think one of them was in the Navy for 23 years, spent more life on the water than, you know, than off, knows what they're generally knows what they're seeing. So you do see these individuals coming forward. But the question, will that big bombshell, that heavy hitter come out? Your guess is as good as mine. I'm hopeful, but you know, the proof will be in the pudding.
You mentioned that witness that's come forward. Just with the time differences here in the UK and the US and how busy my day was, I had my kids most of the day because wife and little girl were away doing their stuff. I've not seen the video yet. I've just seen we have a gentleman come forward. Do you want to tell us what's happened there then as to what the story is?
Yeah, so this is another witness to just some background very, very briefly. Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp released a UAP video that was recorded by an infrared sensor aboard a Navy ship, an advanced warship, the USS Jackson. This is back in 2023. And I'll just cut to the chase. The object, there's actually two objects in this video. They move in formation, so they move across the screen. And this is really important. They maintain the exact same separation over the course of 35 seconds of that video. That means, in essence, that these are, when you do the math and all the angles, that these things are flying in formation. And as the operator zooms in on it, it's a damn tic-tac, right? It's a capsule-shaped craft. There are no wings. There's no exhaust plume visible. This is a very, very bizarre, anomalous video and infrared signature. And this is all very, very fascinating from an analytic perspective for me, because we're seeing this video was recorded off the coast of San Diego in Southern California in the vicinity of San Clemente Island. And in 2004, the Tic Tac incidents began when operators, radar crew aboard the USS Princeton, the guided missile cruiser I think I mentioned previously, radar tracks started popping up on their radar display right in that same area as the 2023 Tic Tac video, right in the same area around San Clemente Island. Gets more interesting than that. In 2004, those objects moved south at a very slow, bizarrely slow airspeed, about 100 knots. And in the new footage, the Tic Tac objects are moving south. So you have the same location, same type of infrared signature, and they're moving in the same direction as in 2004. That's fascinating, right? From an analytic perspective, these parallels are just extraordinary. It's just like when you see reports of the mothership dynamic just, you know, a few months ago in Wyoming, and then you match that up with reporting in 2019 and 2020 in Colorado.
It's probably not the conversation, and we'll run out of time to go into underwater alien bases there, Marek. But, you know, that there is this talk, and I know Tim Gallaudet, you know, Rear Admiral Tim Gallaudet, who's done some great work in the topic, especially in the background and what he's trying to do with his standing and everything else. And he's touched on potential anomalies underwater and that, and it just really does start to go into strange areas of conversation. Is that a difficult conversation for you to have with peers if you're even trying to get a piece into the hill, and if you approach them and said, can you even suggest writing about something as strange as that as an example?
It's a great question. And the answer is, if it's couched in verifiable data and evidence, and once you add all this up, right, you have the new Tic Tac video, which has a water nexus, you have the Omaha video, which clearly has a water nexus, and then you have the report from literally the next day that there was another transmedium event, you have enough data to start kind of putting out a preliminary hypothesis, right? If you want to call it an underwater alien base, fine, you can call it whatever you want, but there's no question that there is documented evidence of this activity in that particular region of the world that dates back, you know, at least 20 years now. So, and again, the Tic Tac incident had that the roiling water was how they knew the four aviators knew where to look. So there appears on its face, there is a very clear objective, nexus with the water. And I don't think it's an accident that Congress added transmedium to the official definition. The formal U.S. government definition of UAP now includes transmedium travel. That's one of the core elements of the definition. And I think it's not surprising based on, you know, the documented incidents that we have on hand, that we know of, let alone the true anomalies that we know the Pentagon has admitted, right? The Aero director Kozlowski has admitted that he personally is stumped by, quote, true anomalies. And they're so stumped that he stated this twice now in the last 6 months that they're hoping to get some of this data out to academia and the public because they are so perplexed by some of these incidents. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. I think that's unprecedented in the history that, you know, the 20 years with Project Blue Book and Grudge and Sign. I don't think there's any one incident or time when when a sitting director of the UFO analysis effort has said, we're stumped. We have no idea what these objects or these anomalies are.
Yeah. And to go back to what you said previously, the proof is in the pudding that, one, they released that data, and two, what they release to be investigated could be really low-hanging fruit to be debunked. But listen, let's finish on a couple of listener questions, Manik, if you don't mind, because a lot
sure.
of people send stuff in.
Absolutely.
Amy had a few, of which you've answered a couple of them about your relationship with Skywatcher. See, I've done it now. But she did ask, what does Manik think the most underreported aspect of the UAP phenomenon is?
Underreported. That's a really good question. I feel like the first thing that popped into my head is my mind from an analytic perspective was truly blown when I took the time to just read. I think at this point, I've probably read hundreds of just the raw Blue Book case reports. And when you have 7 pilots, 2 mechanics, and an engineer, and a astrophysicist, I'm just making this up hypothetically.
Yeah.
Right? They all see the same thing, behaving in ways that are just truly inexplicable. And you see that over and over and over with persistent shapes, morphologies over decades. That's fascinating, right? It's not something that can be reported easily because it's something that a person has to go out and do and actually do the work and read these old reports. And I think the entry point from my perspective was Rubel's book. I mentioned it previously, the report on unidentified flying objects from 1956, which is case after case. It's just extraordinary, right? Radar visual incidents that just defy any easy explanation. So that's the long-winded way of saying that there's just elements of the historical record that are so fascinating, and it's just hard to report on those in any kind of way that is suitable to social media or the current media. And even here, you and I just talking about this doesn't do it justice. You have to go and read the reports, right, to really get a sense of that.
Yeah, I agree. There's the history of the topic can be overlooked, especially when things happen in the now. People look at I would go and look at Graham Rendell, for example, folks. I've got a few of his Foo Fighters books back here.
Yes, wonderful. They're phenomenal books.
Yeah, the detail is ridiculous. He seems to write a book a day of about 500 pages.
Unbelievable. So, the man's
he's taking a couple of weeks off just now to, you know, mess about and do his train stuff. But next up anyway, I've got Notamantis had a few questions. So I'm going to ask 3 of them if you want to kind of answer them quick fire. That's up to you. First off, what level of insight does the public deserve?
I tend to agree. Let's just operate the assumption that Grush and Schumer and Rounds and all these politicians and these whistleblowers, Nell, you go down the list, these allegations of reverse engineering program, retrieval and reverse engineering programs are true. Let's just assume that. I agree with, I think, most people that I think the basic knowledge that there is a non-human intelligence operating should very much be put out into the public. How you do that that's a different discussion. We can probably spend hours discussing that, but I think that alone, but the specific, just like with nuclear technology, right? Civilian nuclear technology, we all know the science, the basic science of how nuclear technology works, but I think there should be limits on anything that's quote unquote dual use, anything that could be used for nefarious or military purposes should not be just thrown out willy nilly into the public domain.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I've had some of those tentative discussions on the podcast before where even the basic, you know, free energy, we should all get free energy. Okay, so say they have that. Do you think overnight you're going to be given a cube that everyone suddenly gets millions of these mass marketed? Stick this in your home. There's your free energy. Not how it works. You would pay a subscription. There would be different companies would provide it. Yada, yada, yada. So that wouldn't be possible. Second part, are UAPs a real security risk or is it overstated?
It's a really good question. I think anytime objects are just like over Langley, right? We know for 17 nights, unknown objects were operating with complete impunity with bright flashing lights. That's by definition is a national security. If we don't know what is over one of the most important air defense bases on the U.S. East Coast that has F-22 fighters, for example, which are the most advanced fighters, one of the most advanced fighters out there right now. When those have to be moved specifically because of this activity, that by definition is a national security concern. I empathize with people who may think that this activity has been going on for 70 years, and it appears to have been, and maybe that's an indication of intent, right? We're still here. We haven't been turned to charcoal yet. But I do think in the national security space, partially to get some credibility, it has to be framed that way also. There's no question about that. It is, I think, by definition, a national security concern at a minimum.
And just for time, I'm going to skip to the last one because I like this question to finish off on, Marek, and you've been really generous. Ross asks, does Marek consider the mainstream media's disengagement with the topic generally as inexplicable as I do?
Oh, man. That's a question that I had a very hard time wrapping my brain around. My logical brain says there's no deep conspiracy here. This is just stigma over, right, 70, 80 years of stigma, and also, frankly, there have been, any number of hucksters and hoaxes in this space that it has turned people off. I understand that. I get that. It's infuriating. I don't know the answer to that question. Is there something more nefarious at play? Who knows? Maybe in 10, 20 years, we'll find out that there was actually a concerted effort to kind of quell this story. Because what we just discussed today, the Schumer legislation, the director of Aero saying that they have talked to firsthand witnesses of unreported UA proof. Those alone should be headlines, I think, in my opinion. Regardless of if they're true or not, just the fact that those stories are out there and that those comments have been made in that legislation, the UAP Disclosure Act, for example, exists. That's just that they're out there should be, in my opinion, a much, much bigger story than that it is. Because at the end of the day, and I think Marco Rubio, current Secretary of State, previously Vice Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said, either this is the biggest story in human history, I'm quoting just about directly, either this is the biggest story in human history, or we have very, very highly credible, very intelligent, smart people with high clearances in very important positions in our government who are, and current people that are in the government now. This is not the folks that we've heard from. These are their other people out there claiming outrageous stuff and they're batshit crazy. Either one of those is a huge, huge story. Any way you slice it, this is a big story. And the media silence is troubling, to say the least, and infuriating at another level.
And I'd like to finish just asking you to put your neck on the line here. What's a couple of predictions you could see for the topic realistically happening before the end of the year?
Predictions for the topic before the end of the year. I'm going to weasel out of that one a little bit just because there's so much political churn right now in the United States that all of everything we're seeing, from trade, tariffs, immigration issues, to the universities and academia, that is sucking up so much oxygen. And oh, by the way, there's still a war in Ukraine, in the Gaza, in Lebanon, Syria front is tragically, still very, very volatile. And at the end of the day, I'm a little pessimistic just based on what I'm seeing right now and where we are. Trump did pledge on Lex Fridman's podcast. He pledged to release more UFO footage. That being said, this is the story of the UFO and the U.S. government over the last 7 years. There's always some other issue. There's always some other pressing matter that will always take precedent over, oh, by the way, there's stuff flying around that we don't know what it is and we can't protect you from. All right. And so I'm maybe at this moment a little pessimistic. That can change. That can change in an instant if, right, a high-profile whistleblower comes out and makes, backs up certain claims or makes their own allegations. Generally a little on the pessimistic side, but that can change in a heartbeat.
Well, Marek, thank you for the work you do on the topic and pushing the UFO UAP conversation and publications like The Hill that maybe perhaps in the past have been reserved for more dry conversations or less fantastical. How can people follow you or keep an eye on the work you do?
Well, first, thanks again for having me, Andy. And it's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed talking with you, and please keep on doing this and engaging with folks. I really appreciate it. So, and folks can follow me on Twitter. I think I'm at M Von Ren, MVONREN, and then at The Hill. I write somewhat regularly at The Hill, purely for fun. That's not a full-time job. I do that purely out of self-interest and fun.
Yeah, I'll put those links in the description as well, folks, but it is M Von Ren on the old Twitter/X, whatever you're calling it these days, people. No doubt it'll change its name again soon when Musk sells up. But Marek, pleasure speaking with you, mate. Great to finally connect face-to-face, and thank you so much again.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a true pleasure.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at COSI.org.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Fight Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week.